Love where you live. We are Radio Newark.
Hey, 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 lovely listener. Thank you again for listening to another one of our podcasts. My name's Kevin Guthrie, local psychotherapist, and passionate about people finding peace and joy in their world. That's why we do these podcasts. We do them because we want you to be a little bit happier. That's from us here at Radio Newark. We have a guest in the studio. Our guest today is Trevor Tacey. Welcome, Trevor.
Thank you, Kev.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. So we have a question, a listener question, and I am almost convinced you can help me out with this one, Trevor. So the question was, somebody emailed in and said, what does EFT stand for? So the acronym stands for Emotional Freedom Technique, sometimes known as tapping. Trevor, could you give us a little bit more background as to what EFT is?
Yes, certainly. EFT is a way of, the Chinese medicine have known about the energy system within the body called the meridians for thousands of years, and we're just starting to catch up in the West. And it's a form of acupuncture without needles. That's one way of explaining it. And we have acupoints on the face and body that tap into these energy systems called meridians. And when we tap on into it, when we have a negative emotion within the body, it's energy trapped in the body, and these meridians get blocked up, the pathways get blocked up. And by tapping on a few areas of the face and body, we can clear these pathways and clear the stress and anxiety from the body. It's not just hearsay, you know. There's a lot of evidence around this as well.
Yeah.
There's a thing called the amygdala, which is the emotional powerhouse of the brain.
Yeah.
And this has been shown to be reduced cortisol levels by between 25% and 40%.
Wow.
Which is massive, really.
Yeah.
So it's a really effective and powerful technique that not a lot of people know about.
Yeah. But also really simple. It's a really simple technique, isn't
really
it?
Really easy to learn.
Yeah. I know that I sometimes use it in therapy. I know that it was introduced to me. I was in therapy at about the age 32, 33, and my therapist at that point introduced it to me. She taught me how to do it, and I remember it being really powerful. And I used to use it all the time. And it was just, for me, the power in it. When I introduced it to somebody else, the reason I like it is because it's mine. It's my mm-hmm. It's my piece of... So. If I was doing it with somebody in therapy, then I would teach them how to do it. I know there's different ways of kind of doing that. But for me, it was something that I took away from my therapy and that I was able to deliver to myself. And for me, that was the powerful thing. So you can do it as many times a day as you want, and it doesn't. Yeah. It can't hurt you, can it?
No, you can't overdose on it.
In fact, I encourage people to use it as often as they want.
Yeah.
So you're currently... Your job is to deliver EFT. Was that correct phrase?
Yeah. I have my own practice.
Yeah.
I deliver EFT. I specialize mostly in trauma. I work from home.
Do you enjoy it?
I love it.
Yeah.
Honestly, I love it so much because it is such a powerful technique. Seeing the transformation in people's lives, you know,
yeah.
I mean, in a very short period of time, it's, you know, I mean, it's like you can't put a price on that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, how long have you been doing it?
Over 10 years.
Wow. And how was it introduced into your world?
Well, that was through my own journey. I suffered with addictions for a number of years, right from my teens. And couldn't break out of it. And eventually, I mean, I was 47 before I went into a treatment center and actually took my last drug. But even after going through treatment and through a 12-step program and so forth, I still found myself still struggling with life.
Yeah.
And still struggling with my behaviors and the way I felt about myself and the anxiety, and that was still there, you know, and I was still sort of trying to hang on, really.
Yeah.
Not really having a quality of life, although I was really pleased that I wasn't taking drugs anymore.
Yeah.
And then I found, and I was on the search for something. I knew that there was something within me that needed to be resolved, and I knew that was things from my childhood, childhood traumas, and through this search, I eventually found EFT through a mind, body, and spirit show that was on at the local showground, Newark Showground, and so I went along there, saw this lady. On a stall, and I had about 3 or 4 attempts to go and see her, and I nearly gave up. And you know, like one of those things where you just knew that there was something was pulling you back.
Yeah.
And eventually got to her. I managed to have a chat with her, and signed up for some treatment, and that's where it all started for me.
Wow.
And the thing about it is when I resolved these traumas, my behaviour seemed to just melt away.
Yeah.
And the other thing about it is my wife was so blown away by what she saw, the difference she saw in me, that she got trained up in EFT as well. So wow. We're both EFT
that's brilliant. So you both practice from home?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I feel like we need to give a bit more background as to how it works. So you said earlier that EFT clears kind of emotional blockage, is that way you described it?
Yeah, it's psychological and the energy side of it as well. So we're using psychology as well.
Yeah.
So you're talking about what the problem, you start off by you're tapping on a certain point called the karate point, which is where the karate chop points. You start off tapping on there, and you talk about, I have this fear of speaking in public.
Yeah.
Which is one I do as well. You want to hear it in my voice.
Doing really well right now.
Anyway, and you'll tap on that, but you put with it an affirmation. So even though I've got this fear of talking in public, I truly and completely accept myself.
Yes.
Or I truly and completely love and accept myself. So you have the two different sides.
Yeah.
You put the affirmation with what the problem is.
Yeah.
And then you go around tapping on the certain points. But before you start, you get a level of where this anxiety is. You know, if you think about it, between 0 and 10, how high is it? So you can keep track about how you're doing.
Yeah.
And so you'll tap on these points, and then you'll ask, after you've done a round, what the how high it is now. And then it'll come down a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you just keep tapping until you get down to 0.
Yeah.
To 1 or 2. But with more serious problems like trauma and that, I do a technique called telling the story.
Yeah.
And and it's a really gentle way of doing trauma. So you start with before anything happened in the trauma, like when everything's okay.
Yeah.
And you'll get them to walk gently into the story, telling it out loud. And then as soon as any emotion comes to the surface, you just tap on the points until that emotion comes down.
Yeah.
Then you send them back to the beginning, and you come through again to another point where the emotion comes up.
Yeah.
And then you can tap it down again, and you just gently go through. Then when they get to the end, they can actually come to the beginning, talk through it, and there's no emotional attachment to it whatsoever. And I think that's the thing that... that's the thing that attracted me to EFT, because it wasn't about re-traumatizing people.
No.
It's about being really gentle in the approach. And and I always remember when I was in treatment, and I had an experience of part of the treatment was to write out your life story. So that was all my trauma and that.
Yeah.
And read it out in front of a bunch of strangers in a street.
Oh, wow.
So I couldn't imagine. It was devastating.
Yeah.
But I was in a real state as a result of that. But an old gentleman came up to me, a counsellor, and he said to me, one day, he says, son, that'll just be a story.
Yeah.
God, I so hung on to those words.
Yeah.
You know, every time I got into a bit of a state, I'd think, you know, one day this is just going to be a story.
Yeah.
But I don't know how that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then EFT showed me how that happens, because my life, you know, my past is just a story now. And I can talk about it. No emotional attachment whatsoever. It didn't change anything that's happened. But no. I haven't got the emotional attachment to it.
I talk to people quite a lot about this. So for example, grief. When we lose somebody and we I find that a lot of people hold on to the grief because I think they get fearful that if they let go of the grief, then they're letting go of the person.
Yeah.
But actually, it's the grief or the emotion that's attached to that, that causes the pain. And what I say to them often is, you will never, ever forget that person. And in the same way that we might not forget a trauma, but what we do want to let go of or process out is the emotion that's wrapped around the trauma.
Absolutely.
We won't forget the event, but no. What we do need to get rid of is the emotion, because then that kind of hampers us and blocks up energy and causes us pain and all sorts of things. But it's always the emotion that we're processing out, isn't it?
That's absolutely right. I mean, you're right. A lot of people think that if they work through this, they'll forget.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That somehow the past will be changed or something.
Yeah.
But it isn't, you know?
You can't change the past.
No. It's just the emotion that's being addressed.
Yeah.
And that's all that really matters.
And sometimes, and I'm sure I'm right in saying this, people get really fearful that they get fearful of the emotion and the fact that they're going to have to look at it more directly to process it back out. And a lot of the time, it's not nearly as frightening as they think it is. And that's what stops people from coming into therapy, from doing things like what you do and all sorts of different types of therapy. They just get fearful.
Yeah, absolutely right, Kev. I think people do have this belief that they're going to open a can of worms that they can't put the lid back on.
Yeah.
And they're really frightened of coming to, and dealing with it because they've heard stories of it. Or whatever.
Yeah. You
know? And it's not true. Not if you go to a decent therapist anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And that in itself can be a bit of a journey.
Yeah.
But there are some really good practitioners out there.
Yeah.
Choose wisely. And if you don't feel comfortable with your practitioner, then move on. It's okay. You haven't committed for life.
No.
If after two or three sessions you're not feeling it, then yeah. move on.
Yeah.
And it's okay to do that.
The other part was that, you know, when a lot of people think that if something has happened in their childhood with their parents, they don't like to talk badly about their parents.
Oh, I know.
And and they don't like to. So they don't like to say that they, you know. And but the thing is, what I loved about working when people do come and they work through this part of it.
Yeah.
It's the part where they get to. Not only do they let go of that belief, but they find forgiveness.
Yeah.
And that's the real, yeah. You know, the gold nugget.
Yeah.
At the end of it.
I completely agree with you with that. I always, so a lot of my work, in fact, nearly all of the stuff that I do in practice takes us back to parenting in some way.
Mm.
It just does. And I always say, I mean, I'm a parent and I can quite happily look at my daughter and go, oh yeah, that's because this happened or that happened. And I always say to people, this is not about blame. This is just about recognition and then giving us the power to then move on from it.
Mm.
It's just not about blame. You know, parents only ever do the best with what they know how and the way that they have been taught and the way they were taught and yada, yada, yada. Sometimes it's more sinister than that. We know it's more sinister than that sometimes. But more often than not, they're doing the best.
Yeah.
That they just are. Yeah. So it's not, but it's really not about blame.
And I spoke to you earlier about the ACE study, the Adverse Childhood Experience study.
Yeah.
And they talk a lot about intergenerational ACEs.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, the traumas that we experience as children are usually passed on from our parents because they've also experienced similar trauma in their lives. And it's this... passing it on from, you know, people think it's, well, I behave this way because it's, you know, I'm like my mum or I'm like my dad. It's genetic.
Yeah.
No, it's not genetic. You know, it's like it's been passed on through a learned behavior.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can unlearn it. And that's the main thing.
Yeah.
And then when you unlearn that, then you can find the forgiveness from the past. Yeah. And, you know, and everything starts.
Absolutely. I talked on the previous podcast about epigenetics.
Yeah.
And so, bits of trauma can be passed on. They refer to them as genetic tags. But you're quite right. Most of it, for me, I'd say a good 75% of our behaviours are learned from the people around us. Yeah. As children, you know, we look at the people around us and copy. That's how we learn and grow. Mm-hmm. And if some of those behaviours aren't the best or the healthiest, then we're not able to go, I'm not learning that because I don't like it or it doesn't look very healthy. We just learn it.
Yeah.
But as adults, we get the opportunity to reprogram.
Yeah. I mean, I've learned so much over the years that I had no idea about before. You know, and you were talking about epigenetics and, you know, how our thoughts affect our genes yep. and so forth. And but also, you know, what I learned also was about neuroplasticity, you know, the fact that the brain, you know, that we have neural networks in the brain, and yep. if we're thinking negative things all the time, that neural network will get bigger and stronger. Yep. But if we can change the thinking, you know, to a more positive thinking, you know, by simple things, you know, like gratitude lists and things yep. like that, and tapping, you know, doing some tapping yourselves or, you know, yep. finding a therapist. But the main thing is that them positive neural networks can grow as well, yeah. and then they have synaptic pruning, and the other one starts to break down. And yeah. I'm thinking, I love to think of that, you know, when I start getting to thinking negatively, you know what I mean, or worrying about something, yeah. and thinking which side of the brain I'm actually working on.
Yeah,
and I've got, you know, I've got a choice in that matter.
Absolutely. There's a quote that I love. So see what you think about this. The quote is, as children, we are not responsible for the programming we received. However, as adults, we are 100% responsible for all choices we make.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, it's a really powerful quote. I always use it if I'm delivering anything that's corporate in kind of workshops and stuff. I always use it as a little bit like a test, to test the room. Mm. And I'll show the quote and I'll say, who agrees with this? And sometimes you'll get 100% go, yeah, yeah, I agree with that. Yep, absolutely. And then sometimes you'll get some people going, no, I don't agree with the 100%. The part that they disagree with is the 100% part.
Mm.
And they'll go, no, not 100%. And then we might have a short conversation about it, but I never go into it too deep because it can get too contentious.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And you don't need that at the beginning of a workshop.
No.
But yeah, some people disagree with 100%, and what I say to them is, it really is 100%. You might not feel it right now because you're not ready for that piece of learning, but honestly, it's 100%. It's just 100%.
Yeah.
So we talked briefly earlier about trauma, and off air we were talking about trauma. What do you think we mean by the word trauma?
Well, yeah, it's a good question, because I was thinking about it. Well, I've obviously thought about this over a number of years, but I've realised that a lot of people that come along think that trauma is all the really serious things, like rape and sexual abuse and veterans, you know, like the war and torture and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it isn't. It can be so many different things. You know, it can be domestic violence, and it can be witnessing domestic violence.
Yeah.
It can be they talk about neglect. You know, I mean, being neglected as a child, our needs not being met,
yeah.
can be a trauma. Being emotionally abused, you know, by what's said to us.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about this earlier, about how school, you know, being in a school and being humiliated by a teacher in front of your classmates can have a devastating effect on a young child, and they carry out around that for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
It impedes on their life. You know, a lot of these traumas, the smaller traumas that we don't really talk about so much, can have just as a devastating effect on children as the big things as well, and it's about how it limits our ability to succeed in life, you know, and to reach our full potential, because we've always got these little niggling thoughts that, oh, I'm not good enough, or I can't do that, you know, I'm not smart enough, I'm not, you know, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not handsome enough, I'm not this, I'm not that. It's always, you know, there's always a little niggling thing there that stops us from reaching our full potential and taking risks in life. You know, if we want to get somewhere, if we want to really reach our full potential, we need to take risks in life. And sometimes there's an inability to do that because of things, with experiences that we've had from the past.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we're looking at trauma, when we say the word trauma in therapy, we refer to it as a big T and little T. So little T can be as little as, I remember a teacher telling me in class that I was stupid.
Mm.
I still remember the classroom. I still remember the teacher. I was in history. I remember how the classroom was set up, where the blackboard was, what he looked like, And that was because at that point, it hurt. It really hurt. So that then, so how old would I have been? 13, 14? It then begins to affect the rest of my life because I believe that he was right and that he called me stupid, and that has stayed with me forever. And even now at 52, there are still points like, oh, am I stupid? Should I be doing this? And then I have to kind of talk myself out and go, no, you're not stupid. You just didn't like history. I didn't like history. I couldn't get on with it. And yet he just blamed it on me being stupid. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not stupid. I just didn't want to do history.
Yeah.
And also,
we all have to fit in little boxes, don't we?
Yeah, or maybe I didn't like your teaching technique. Maybe, yeah. Maybe it was about the way you were teaching me. So trauma can be the smallest of things. It can be, I don't know, somebody at 8 years old, you're at school and somebody falls out with you, and that can be a point of a little T trauma that can then affect you. And in therapy and in EFT and with tapping, we're always looking for these little points that create limiting beliefs in our mind that we then, like you said, stop us from growing and learning and developing. So they just hamper our life, don't they?
Absolutely. And the other thing we touched on was like, there's a lot, we're all different.
Yeah.
You know, and some of us are a lot more sensitive than others.
Yeah.
And so, you know, somebody might have a teacher that's sort of embarrassed them in front of their classmates, and it goes right over the top of their head, and another one, it'll affect them for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
There's something else I want to mention as well about trauma. And there's a guy called Bessel van der Kolk. He's sort of really big researcher in treatment of trauma.
Yeah.
And he was talking about veterans getting PTSD.
Yeah.
And he was also talking about the fact that usually if they get PTSD, they've had childhood trauma.
Yeah.
It makes them more susceptible to
Yes.
it. So, yeah. You know, children that have been brought up with these adverse childhood experiences are more likely to be easily traumatized in their adult life as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's interesting with that is that somebody might recognize PTSD from their time in the forces, yet wouldn't necessarily recognize that it began much earlier. Mm-hmm. I've worked with people a lot on self-esteem and low self-worth. I don't know, they might identify something that happened at school when they were 14, and they go, oh, yeah, I think it must have been that. I'm like, no. Probably it was probably way, way younger than that, because at some point the foundations were set. And if at 6 or 7 the foundations were set positively in terms of self-esteem and self-worth, then when the thing happens at 14, it doesn't affect you in the same way. And it's the same with any kind of trauma. The foundations are always set. This is where psychotherapy comes in. The foundations are always set way, way younger. So even from even before birth, sometimes if we're being carried by a mum who is under trauma, depressed, using substances, anything like that, we will be affected by that.
You've got all that cortisol running through your veins.
Absolutely,
child, yeah.
Absolutely. And again, a lot of people go, I remember working with somebody who's, did his dad leave when he was 3 years old? And it was like, I was 3, I can't remember that, I don't know. And I was like, it still has an effect. And they're like, how? How can that affect me? I'm like, because even at 3, one of your primary carers left, like literally just walked out of your life and you never saw that person again. And in your little head, you can't work that out. You literally can't work it out at all. It's
the brain ain't got to that point.
Yeah,
it's developed that far.
But what it does feel is a point of, whoa, something's not right, something's not right. And then we go into that kind of fight or flight mode of one of my safety nets has just been removed.
Yeah. So it's download. Between 0 and 6, we just downloaded information.
Yeah.
We can't decipher it or work out what's, you know, logically what's going on.
Yeah.
Just downloaded information.
Yeah.
So we're just basically working on feelings.
We're downloading information, but the mind is also developing based on the information that it's downloaded.
Yeah.
So I remember at 3 months, I don't remember, I was told at 3 months old, I was taken into hospital because I was really ill. For 3 months, I think it was something like meningitis. I was baptized in hospital because they thought I was going to die. It was quite serious. So even at 3 months, my little brain would have been coping with the fact that it was removed from its primary carers, because mum and dad didn't come in with me. I was taken into hospital. They came and visited me every day, probably. But for all intents and purposes, I'm removed from my safety nets. And then my brain starts developing according to that. And then it's kept there for 3 months. And then it's given back to the primary carers. It was all fine. I was ill. Do you know what I mean? Nobody beat me.
No.
But that would have had a profound effect on who I was then as an adult. And it did. Yeah. I worked that out many years ago in therapy. But I guess I relied that on a family member telling me that story.
Yeah, I think that's an important point as well, because there's a lot of people that you know, they've got the behaviours that are the symptoms of experienced trauma,
yeah,
but have no conscious recollection of it.
Yeah.
But it that doesn't mean, you know, that because they can't find it, because they aren't consciously aware of it, doesn't mean that we can't still work with it as well, you know, and help them with it.
Yeah, I've started to encourage my clients to go away and speak to people and have chats with people that are still around, aunties, uncles, just to pick up little stories and see what was around.
Yeah.
Because it's so profound. A lot of people still struggle to believe that we can be affected by those early years so early.
Mm.
And even, like I say, whilst we're being carried by mum.
But the other thing as well that a lot of people are not aware of is, like, if we are suffering from stress, anxiety and depression as a result of unresolved trauma, there's a lot of other elements to it as well, you know. And the ACE study talked about people's lives being cut short by as much as 20 years.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, how could that be about? And it's because of the lifestyles.
Yeah.
You know, because to cope with it, they're either taking medications. Yeah. Sometimes it's illegal. Sometimes it's prescribed.
Yeah.
You know, there's drinking, food, you know, so emotional eating.
Yeah.
So it leads to diabetes, heart disease, and all sorts of the major illnesses can be attributed to unresolved trauma at the bottom.
Yeah.
So there's so many areas that we're not, you know, that we're not aware of.
Yeah.
And it's not being talked about either. So it's good that people get a chance to come and speak about it.
Yeah. Yeah. People. And other people that I work with still really struggle to understand how, I don't know, something that happened when they were three years old is affecting how they eat or how they treat themselves. Let's say how they treat themselves now. So do they go out every Saturday night and get absolutely bladdered? Or are they able to have a couple of gin and tonics within moderation a couple of times a month? Mm. And when we talk about the continuum of self-abuse, doing behaviours like that, and I'm like, no. That's at one end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
At the other end of the spectrum, you've got somebody that could be going to the gym five or six times a week and beasting themselves in the gym. I see a lot of people in the gym and I'm like, that is not healthy. Mm-hmm. What you're doing there is not healthy. Yeah. And we know how healthy the gym is, but they've taken it that step too far. Or they're eating too much, or they're eating the wrong kinds of food, or they're drinking too much. It can be so many different things. Yeah, that's all self-abuse.
Yeah. And people that, because they're going to the gym, they think they're doing a good thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so they can get away with it, you know, and it's not, you know. It's like, it's finding out, I think when people are going out drinking and or they're going out for meals and so forth, or they're going to the gym or whatever they're doing, It's about finding out the reason for it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going out there socializing, great. You know, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And like, if you're going to the gym just because you want to get trim and so forth.
Yeah.
But if you're doing all this to change the way you feel.
Yeah.
It's a different proposition altogether.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite words in the world is balance.
Mm.
And for me, it's always about balance. Yeah. Where's your balance?
Yeah.
And when we look for balance, I'm not talking about looking at the gym on its own and going, do I have balance there? I'm talking about balance in your life, from what you're eating to how you're exercising to everything has a balance. And the balance of one thing affects the balance of something else.
Yeah.
So I encourage people to look at everything and go, where's your balance?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where's your sweet spot where everything is really nice?
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard. It is hard.
It is hard, yeah. It's lovely when you hit it. It's hard to hang on to, though.
I think I'm almost sure that, was it Rogers that would refer to that as self-actualization?
All right.
That point when... And we apparently we hit self-actualization, but we don't stay there because it's too hard to hit. So self-actualization is those sweet points in the world where you go, and everything is in balance, but they are hard to hit.
Yeah,
even for people, I consider myself fairly emotionally intelligent, but still my life can go off balance at times. It just can.
Yeah.
I'm human and I'm not perfect.
That's right. Yeah, we're not perfect. And I like to think that, you know, I'm learning all the time.
Yeah.
My life is about learning. I'm not frightened of trying new things. I don't get angry so much when I see something in myself that I don't like. I just think, wow, there's something I can work on.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and it's an all different mindset, you know.
Yeah.
I love it.
But that never stops, does it?
No, never stops. No, I never want it to stop either.
No.
It's exciting.
I also think the growing never ever stops as long as you want it to happen.
Yeah.
And as long as, like you've just said, you're able to see those points and you go, oh wow, there's something else to learn there.
Yeah.
But that's a choice. When we were talking about choices earlier, we get to choose whether we learn and grow from it or whether we look at it and go, yeah, I'm not touching that.
Yeah. And it's when you get to that point as well where you recognise, I recognise things in myself where if I get into it, say, even with my partner, you know, she says something and it triggers something in me and I feel angry. But instead of blaming or getting into an argument or pointing the finger, you know, I think, wow, you know, there's something, you know, I didn't realise, you know what I mean? I wasn't ready for that happening.
Yeah.
But I can go in my little room and do what's happening on if I need to. And it has happened quite a few times, believe me.
Whenever we're blaming somebody else, there's room there for growth.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a point there. Trevor, thank you so much for being here today. We're almost at the end of our time. That was a really, really interesting conversation. Thank you so much.
I really enjoyed it, Kev.
Good. Do you have any little nuggets that you would like to leave the listener with?
Right. I was just writing about one this morning and somebody suggested to me that if I want to get on in life and I want to make some changes in my life, I need to be an idwit.
Idwit.
An idwit, yeah. So I had no idea what an idwit was. So an idwit is, I'll do whatever it takes.
Perfect, I like that.
Yeah, I'll do whatever it takes. And I just have to remind myself of that because procrastination is one of my downfalls.
Yeah.
And so following that, I do the 5-4-3-2-1.
Yeah.
Approach where when I get an idea, well, I need to do some work on, rather than putting it off and doing something else, I do the 5-4-3-2-1, and that's just a countdown.
Yeah.
5-4-3-2-1, do it. Yeah, and don't procrastinate.
Yeah, I like that. I promise you that if you're procrastinating over something, there is usually a point of fear behind it.
Yeah.
Find the fear and step into it, or just step into it anyway.
Yeah.
You might not even need to find the fear, just step into it.
I think 5-4-3-2-1 does that.
Yeah.
Give you a chance to think about it. Don't let the committee get in the head and start giving me 101 reasons why I shouldn't do this.
There will always be reasons why we shouldn't step into something. There just will be, but don't allow them. If you want to grow and if you want to advance your life, then like Trevor said, don't listen to the committee.
Yeah,
because the committee don't know what they're talking about.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Remember that the brain is wired to keep us safe, but it's so wide to keep us safe that it can stop us from growing.
That's right.
It just can.
Yeah, this last comment is if I'm not in my comfort zone, I need to be out of my comfort zone to grow.
To grow, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I can't stay in my comfort zone. It just keeps me stuck in one place.
Yeah. And again, that's perfect because a lot of people don't get that. If we are uncomfortable, usually we're in growth.
Yeah.
We're in growth mode.
Yeah.
Which is, for me, perfect. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for listening, people. So remember, these podcasts are yours. if we're not covering subjects that you want to know more about, then let us know. Let us know what you want us to talk about, and we will talk about it. As long as it comes under the remit of mental health and well-being, we're happy to talk about it. We're here to build bridges. We're here to break down the stigma. If you want to contact us, we are available at radionewark.co.uk. There are iOS and Android apps that are available to access. Contact info is, you can call us on 01636 678 033, or you can email studio@radionewark.co.uk. As I always say, please, please be very, very kind to yourself and be kind to everybody around you. Till next time, take care, be happy. Bye. Radio.